Hello.
You found us.
Welcome to Emergency Protocol, a podcast for people who are stressy and depressy.
We are your hosts,
Denise
and Jackie Freed. That's my mama.
And that's my baby.
We are sharing our 12 steps reimagined for today's society.
And our bumpy, pothole-ridden spiritual paths.
And we're bringing you along for the ride.
This is us doing the actual work.
When the shit hits the fan, you know it's time for
Emergency Protocol.
Okay. Hi.
Hi.
Oh, we're facing each other now?
I am facing you, but you can face that whatever you want. Clap.
No.
Start.
Just here. I'm going to hold this. Thank
Starting.
You. Okay. Goob City over here.
Welcome back to Emergency Protocol.
Welcome
we're just
back.
We're just protocoling.
We sure are.
It's life's in session. Mm-hmm. Last time we talked about things not going our way or you know, having a rough time. Mm-hmm. And kind of to continue that conversation, it's like there's a thing that we talk about in some 12-step rooms that says one day at a time. Mm-hmm. And you were like, one day is too
what
long.
What the fuck? One day?
A whole day?
Oh my God, one day at a time? No.
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 So why is that too much?
Days are fucking long, dude. One day? I'm like, I don't even know what's going to come up in the face of a day.
That's true.
So, yeah. And I have to get through a whole one?
Yeah.
Again? And I just got through a day?
Yeah. That's what you got to do.
Ugh. Now I'm starting to have resentments about being born.
Adulting is hard.
Add it to the list.
Right?
Yeah.
Got to do this again
Number
and again.
Number one resentment is that I was born.
But you got your Invisaligns off, so there's that.
Yeah, yeah. You can't tell, but I did. Feels good. And I wasn't only thinking about that in the context of my own experience, but we have a mutual friend who just had a kid and is deep in that, like, newborn, no sleep. You've got this, like, creature attached to you 24/7. You don't know what you're doing, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I'm like... And she was feeling overwhelmed. And I was like, dude, forget one day at a time, like 1 hour, 1 minute at a time, like focus on what my therapist told me to focus on, like focus on your primal needs. You got to eat. He's got to eat. Baby's got to eat.
Yep.
You got to sleep. Baby's got to sleep. You got to like rinse your body. Baby got to rinse his body. Mm-hmm. And like, that's it.
And repeat.
Anything else is bonus.
Right.
Right.
Sleep, like, eat, poop, and pee.
Primal needs. Yeah.
Yes.
And water.
And water.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, that's my protocol right now. It's like, have I had water? Have I eaten?
Have you had water? I have some water.
I have water. Water. I brought my water. Okay. I have water.
All right. I'll have a sip.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Drink your water. You're a miracle.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know, you're at work and you're like, man, how, like, this day is taking forever. Like, ugh, feels like such a trudge, right? It's just like, nope, I just got to get to this, the end of this hour, right? Mm-hmm. Just got to get to like 4 o'clock.
Right.
Right. And then I got to get to 4:30. Then I got to get to 5. And then I got to get to 5:30. Oh, look, 5:30, I'm done with my work day. I can go and be free. Right?
Yeah. But doesn't that say something about your work day when you're just like, can't wait to get out of there? Maybe you're not doing the right work.
I disagree with that.
Really?
I think it's reasonable to expect to enjoy your job, but the way that we've upheld work as like a core part of somebody's personality and how they're supposed to find fulfillment, like the phrase, find something you love to do, you'll never work a day in your life. That's fucking bullshit.
Yeah, you'll still be working.
That's a totally unreasonable expectation.
Right.
Right?
Well, that's not the expectation I'm saying, but I think there's also, it's just when you're not feeling it, you're not feeling it, right?
This is how I feel regardless. This is how I feel when I'm not at work.
Got it. Okay.
Right?
Which is kind of when I was talking about being newly sober. Mm-hmm. And I still had the like craving mm-hmm. to get high or drink or whatever it was.
Yeah.
All of those, mm-hmm. not just one of those, but both of those. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, just right now, I'm not going to. Like right this second, mm-hmm. we're sitting here and I'm not going to have a glass of wine. I'm not going to smoke mm-hmm. any weed, right? So, I had to live in those micro moments mm-hmm. all through the day. So I get what right. you're saying. It's like when you're in it, you just have to.
Right. But that was for you. You're saying that was limited. I mean, not necessarily you only experience that when you are newly sober, but like that's kind of the reality of my everyday experience, only I'm not getting sober.
Right.
Right?
Right.
It hasn't stopped for me.
Well, it didn't stop for me either. There's moments where there's times where it's just like, got to get through this day. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to get through it. And then I get through it. And then it's like, okay, you know, and people will ask, like, you're going to have a drink or can't you ever have a drink? I'm just like, not today. Maybe tomorrow, but not today. Mm-hmm. Right? Because I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But just for today, I'm choosing not to ingest anything that I know is going to be harmful to me and my life. Mm-hmm. And I know that you don't have the luxury of just abstaining from how you feel. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's kind
it's of the crux of what we're... It's not something that I'm like choosing.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's also, I think, something I think there's a mistaken idea that I'm choosing to get high or drink. Right? Because right. when I'm in the craving of it,
right.
there is no stop. There's no choice.
Right.
It is. We are going.
Right.
And it's interesting because I read this book, The Many Lives of Mama Love, which yeah. I kept talking to you about. And then it got
my my good friend. Wire. You gotta cut that out.
Okay. My good friend Nancy referred it to me. Uh-huh. And whenever Nancy says to read something, I just read it. I don't mm-hmm. even question it. I didn't know what it was about. I just started listening.
Yeah.
It's about a woman who you know, ends up in a recovery, but like goes to jail and talks about the cycle of dysfunction that brings about and, mm-hmm. you know, losing her kid. Just the life of an addict, what happens. Yeah. And this morning on my Instagram feed, Oprah was talking about it because it's their book of the month now. And she was having a discussion around it. And one of the comments underneath it was, how could, you know, something about, well, she chose drinking and drugs over her children. And I'm like, no, she didn't. The drugs had a hold of her and there was no choice whatsoever. And it's fucking heartbreaking.
Right.
When you're in that place and you love who you love and what you love so much and you can't get out. Like there's no way of getting out of the disease when you're in the disease, right?
There's very heavily a biological factor to it.
And so there's a very heavy biological factor to what you're talking about too, where it's not just like, I'm going to choose to be happy.
Right.
What I can choose is maybe to take a shower, mm-hmm. right? I can choose to some. And I think maybe this goes to our contrary actions. Were we talking about contrary actions and stuff like that with Kim this week?
I don't know if it was with Kim.
I don't know if it was or not. But I think it ties to, you know, I guess the question of the day was
talk to your microphone.
Whether or not.
She's working on becoming a professional podcaster. I'm we're not quite there yet. Not. Sorry to our editing crew. Just a
person talking to my daughter on a couch in our garage.
I know.
Contrary the question action. Was today mm-hmm. about whether fake it till you make it is helpful or harmful. And I commented that, you know, in the beginning of my sobriety, faking it was helpful.
Yeah.
Because I pretended mm-hmm. to act in the way that I wanted to be mm-hmm. until I was that. Mm-hmm. like, and I said, like, I'm super grateful that I am a woman who has dignity and grace and can walk with my held high. And, you know, I know who I am and I feel good in my own skin today, which mm-hmm. is a huge, huge, huge gift for someone who always felt less than.
Yeah.
And angsty. And I still feel that. It's mm-hmm. not like I don't feel those things anymore. I just, they're not like the overarching looping dialogue in my head of not good enough, not smart enough, not pretty enough, not mm-hmm. thin enough, not enough, you know? Mm-hmm. And coupled with, if you only knew who I was, like they, and I don't think this is unique to alcoholics, but they do say like alcoholics are egomaniacs with inferiority complexes, right? Mm-hmm. Like on one hand, this very grandiose feeling mm. about what we are capable of. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, not feeling worthy of it, mm. which is a very interesting thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know where I'm going with that, but I think our conversation that we were having with Kim was like just the fact that there are days mm-hmm. where you just have to like go minute by minute.
Right.
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 So it's like,
what do I actually have to do right now?
Right.
Yeah.
And so for me in the drug world, it was like, okay, for right today, I'm not going to drink or use. So, mm-hmm. and usually I was the kind of addict who would use up all of what I had. I wasn't like parsing it out for the week. Mm-hmm. I would just do mm-hmm. it all. And so there wasn't always
you were binging your extra
around. Mm. And so it's like, okay, so some of it might be, okay, I'm not going to go to the dealer's house. Like, I'm not going to go to, you know, I might have to drive a different way home from work mm-hmm. because sometimes my car would find itself in front of the dealer's house mm. without any conscious thought on my part.
Right.
Like, that's just where my car went. Mm-hmm. And so how do you, like, hedge your bets around bad decisions, mm-hmm. right? Even though I don't feel like I had the power of choice, there is some power of behavioral choice. When I'm like driving into my car, I can choose mm-hmm. to like be present
yeah.
for the drive and yes. say, okay, I'm not going to drive to the dealer. I'm not going right. to drive to the liquor store.
Right.
Well, it didn't matter if I drove to the liquor store because I wasn't old enough to drink in California, so I couldn't drive to a liquor store. I'd still have to have somebody buy me liquor, which is insane. Mm. I was an alcoholic and I couldn't even buy liquor. Mm-hmm. But I still found enough to drink to be an alcoholic.
Somehow. Yeah. Hmm.
But so my curiosity is in the space where you're at, where you're living in this space mm-hmm. of kind of not feeling great. Mm-hmm. What are some solutions based on what we wrote that have worked or do work when you have tried them? Or have you tried them?
I don't think I'm there yet. I don't think I'm there yet. Like, there are definitely, I have my little mantra, right? Mm-hmm. And I can say that, but that's like,
what's the mantra?
The Universal Mother's taking care of me.
Okay.
Right? And that can like drop me in for like that moment. That can help me be more present. But I think I'm just so frustrated. Like, yeah. I feel partly stuck because there are amends that I know I need to make. And I feel like there are a lot of obstacles in the way of me making them. Mm. Right? Primarily taxes. That's really the biggest one. That takes up so much of my mental and emotional real estate.
Okay.
Like, hugely.
Got it.
And then I feel bad because it's not being solved as easily as it as I would like it to be, even mm-hmm. though I'm working at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I do get up the like giddy up to actually work on something and try to improve it, and then it comes back and it doesn't work out, like they're like, oh, you owe more money, or oh, like this is mm-hmm. wrong or whatever, then I'm like doubly defeated, because I'm like, man, I put in all that time and effort. When I do get to a point where I'm able to act on something
mm-hmm.
and then it turns out that I haven't actually completed whatever that task or that amends is to mm-hmm. completion,
mm-hmm.
like that really feels like a setback again.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I'm like, man, like I really put in all this effort and now I still have to do XYZ.
Right.
Right. Like that's
well,
really.
Well, usually the XYZ is writing another check for the IRS specifically.
Right. Which I'm not able to do easily.
Right.
So that really, like having that setback really impacts me in a way that I find to be probably inordinate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like that to me is really hard yeah. for some reason.
Well, I think that weighs on most people when they owe something to a big entity that you don't yeah. have any control over or any power with, right? Mm-hmm. That's just how it is.
Right.
So, and I do hear that. I know that making the amends, you know, having that weigh on us, like the when you know you owe something, mm-hmm. whether it's money or an apology, or you need to set something right with somebody, or you need to pay them back in some way, or whatever it is, there is a freedom in when you do make the amends and mm-hmm. it does go away and you're like free.
Right. But like, I can't see when that's going to happen.
Right.
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 So,
but you've also just started on this journey. So like none of this stuff is instantaneous.
Right.
Which is why it's called working.
Yeah. yeah. But I'm like, again, I'm just kind of in my like baseline functioning.
Right.
Right. So I think it's also interesting too, like addiction is very much similar to anxiety and depression, and that clearly there's like fixed neural pathways that are on this like loop, like a feedback loop, right? And that's what mm-hmm. gets people stuck in where they are. And so in order to change that, you have to change your brain chemistry, which is to not use, right? Mm-hmm. Like literally, like you just don't ingest a substance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the choice to not ingest a substance, to not to not ingest a substance. Maybe yeah. I should ingest a substance. But like that precipitating incident, I think, is why people who have issues with addiction was a choice that they made. And so that's why society finds it easy to place blame on those people.
On the choice, right.
On the choice. Because right. somebody, at some point, that person made a choice.
Right.
To try a drink or a drug
well,
or whatever.
Well, I think in the beginning, right? the choice was self-medication, right? Because
right.
it was like, I feel anxiety and depression.
Right.
And shyness and loneliness and fill right. in all those blanks of
yeah.
comfort and dis-ease in myself.
Right.
And then all of a sudden I take a drink or whatever.
Right.
And now I'm funny and I'm popular mm-hmm. and irreverent and all yeah. of that worry kind of just goes away.
Yeah.
Depending on what kind of drinker you are, right? Some mm-hmm. people then get weepy and mm-hmm. sad, and other people are happy drunks. Like some people break
angry,
out in fights.
Some
people like that. It kind of like will at a certain point amplify what's really going on.
Yeah.
But at the onset of it mm-hmm. is like relief. Like to just shut mm-hmm. it off for a minute. Right.
Right.
And so where that becomes like chasing that relief.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than dealing with the issue, which dealing
right.
with the issue is in itself painful and hard, which is why we ingested it in the first place. I don't want
right.
to deal with that. I don't want to face my fears. I don't want to have to go up to somebody at a party and introduce myself without a drink in my hand, without right. some kind of lubricant to help me get over the social barriers of fucking talking to people. I mean, there's a reason they're belly up to the bar at any beginning party so that everybody can finally
That's why the happy hour is before the reception dinner where you want everybody on the dance floor.
Yes. Yeah. Because they're not going to get on the dance floor until they've had a drink or two.
Right.
Unless
you're me.
Unless.
If you need people on the dance floor at your wedding, let me know and I'll be the first one out there.
I will not be the first one out there, but I might be out there later. Mm. Anyway.
The right song comes on.
The right song comes on.
Yeah. So, okay. Interestingly, I feel like we also talked about how when you were first getting sober, your sponsor literally like made a schedule for you.
Yes.
I don't have a sponsor who's making a schedule for me. I have a therapist and I can ask her specifically for that resource and maybe I should do that. Mm-hmm. But if I didn't have a therapist, like...
How would you do that?
How would... Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to come down to finding meetings and finding people, and we're creating that. So it's just not here yet.
Yeah.
We're creating the solution that you're craving.
Right. But also like for people who are not in LA, they're going to need resources too.
Correct.
So,
I mean, there are plenty of all kinds of different 12-step programs. We've put a link in our, you know, on our thing of, I mean, I'm sure you can fill in a blank somewhere in that, you know, smorgasbord of 12-step stuff. It might not all fit and it might be harder. Like when I was talking today about, you know, or we were talking about smaller towns where it's not as easy when you were talking to your dad last night about how, you know, if you're at a meeting and it's the same six people every week, it might get a little stale, right? We're in LA. I could go to like 10 meetings today, at least
in each program
and hit like either a 5-person meeting or a couple 100-person meeting, right? Like I have the luxury of that.
Yeah.
And it is a luxury. And some people don't have that luxury, but you do with what you've got, right? And there's a way to, with Zoom now, I went to dinner and a meeting on Thursday night with a friend and she's like, I Zoom into this Saturday morning, like Paris meeting every week. Like you can literally Zoom in to meetings around the world at this point because of the pandemic, which is a huge win that was not here before 2020. Right.
Right. So then what do you choose if you just go, you find a Al-Anon meeting? If you don't feel like you're
addicted
to something.
Adult children of alcoholics, sex addicts, weed addicts, alcoholics, cocaine, Narcotics Anonymous. I don't even know the whole list, but there's pretty much any kind of overeaters, food. There's so many programs. I'm sure that it could at least get them close to the box that somebody's trying to check. And there might even be anxiety and depression and all this. I don't know. There could be.
Right.
I don't think that the human condition of what you're talking about is much different than what we talk about in AA because it's a human condition. It's not a a Jackie condition. Like when I get in a room and you've been in the rooms where we have everybody, then the rooms that I've created at work.
But that meeting but that meeting is different than a lot of the other meetings I've been to as like a tag along.
Because there's so many different kinds of people there?
Yeah, I think because it's like any program.
Right.
A meeting
because it's gamblers and
there's
Al-Anons
like so again I think we've talked about this before too. It's like it strips away the specific like kind of cliches and phrases that come along with a specific.
And I think actually there are meetings that are like that because I heard somebody announce that in a meeting the other day.
Okay,
so there are meetings where it's like anybody's welcome, welcome. And I think that's becoming more.
Yeah, I mean the acceptable. Reason I haven't gone to a meeting is because I have like I feel like I would. Like I have imposter syndrome just thinking about it, right? Like I don't actually belong in this meeting because I've never hit that kind of rock bottom.
Well, you've hit your own rock bottom. It doesn't matter what kind it is.
Yeah.
We don't compare bottoms.
Right. Nobody, I guess, is going to kick you out. If they kick you out, then they're probably a top or a bottom, asshole.
Then we'll be comparing those.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Wow. Anyway, me and my HR nightmare mom.
I'm like blushing.
Yikes. All right. Anyway.
Anyway.
Moving on.
But, you know, the thing that we say in these rooms is like the bottom is where you stop digging, right? Is yeah. it the bottom is where you put the shovel down. You could dig as you can go all the way to the grave if that's right. how far you want to dig.
Right.
But you could stop digging at any point and go, okay, I surrender.
Right.
So is there that actually maybe that's the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think that maybe you're back at step one where you need to surrender this thing again?
And probably. Kind of
start, because it is, continuous. It's not like you just do it once.
Right, right.
Like maybe that's where we're at.
Yeah.
Just for those of you who are new and somehow found us and you're hopping in the middle of our conversation. The step one that we wrote is we are not okay, we have not been okay, and we're not getting better on our own.
Right.
So does that feel like where you're at?
Yes, kind of. I mean, the thing is, I feel like I know this about myself, and I've said it out loud here and in many other situations. Like this is the step that plays over and over in my mind.
Is right? that we're not
is
okay?
Step one.
Uh-huh.
Over and over. Like, and I feel like in some ways I'm like chipping away at that. In some ways I'm not. Right? Part of it is like I realize that I self-isolate a lot. So I've been trying to say yes to more things as they come up
mm-hmm.
and try to get like, you know, stretch my social muscles and what, you know what I mean? Just like yeah. get less comfortable than I normally am.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it.
But then if we go into step two,
mm-hmm.
I want to find out if you feel like if this is accessible to you or not.
Mm-hmm.
We believe we are worthy of getting better and that things will get better.
That's one I'm struggling with because, and we had this conversation this week as well, is that I am generally speaking pretty spoiled. I've been very well taken care of. I was given many resources
mm-hmm.
my whole life and things have just worked out.
Yeah.
But I feel incredibly guilty about that. And I feel really uncomfortable with the fact that I know all of the more pressing problems that I have can be solved.
Right.
It's just, it feels like there are logistical hurdles to that and also emotional hurdles to that.
In the original 12 steps, it was came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
Mm.
So for me, part of that was like, oh, my thinking is not clear, right? I'm thinking right. a little off the right. reservation, so to speak.
And I know I'm doing that and I'm using my like therapy tools to catch myself right. in that.
And we changed that we believe
mm-hmm.
we're worthy of getting better
mm-hmm.
and that things will get better. And we didn't really introduce anything bigger until step three, which is we trust that something bigger is taking care of us. In your case, it's like the Universal Mother is taking care of me, mm-hmm. right? So the Universal Mother is taking care of me.
Mm-hmm.
We trust that something bigger is taking care of us. So in the space mm-hmm. of the guilt of privilege,
mm-hmm.
is there also space for this is what you need as a person and your Universal Mother that is unique to you
mm-hmm.
is giving you what you need
mm-hmm.
and that possibly everyone else's Universal Mother or whatever it is that they have is also going to take care of them. Like you're not is there a sense that if you are being given the grace of mm-hmm. this universal mother, that somebody else is not going to have theirs? Like you're taking it away from someone?
I think it's hard to not feel that way when there's like several very massive wars happening around the globe right now.
Right.
Right. So it's kind of that same thing of like why people distrust like Christianity or Judaism or Islam or whatever for any reason. Right. It's like, how is there, if there is a God that's taking care of us, why are these things happening?
Right.
Right. Like yes. that dissonance is really hard to.
Yes.
Overcome.
Agreed. I don't know. I think I'm more of a compartmentalized kind of person where I mm-hmm. don't take on, like, you know, I do take on some stuff and I don't take on other stuff. And I'm mm-hmm. pretty deliberate about what I'm going to feel for and not feel for. Mm-hmm. Right. Right now, what I think I can feel for is like, okay, we can write letters and we can write postcards and we can do some stuff to deal mm-hmm. with our own government here on this
right
this land that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how me, like, I feel terrible about what's going on in Gaza. I felt really like heartbroken for those children and mm-hmm. mothers and people who have lost people, having been someone who's lost someone I love, right? Mm-hmm. Or people that I love. It's devastating, and it doesn't matter who you are, where you live. That mm-hmm. is a devastating feeling to lose the people you love, especially when it's in an act of war. Mm-hmm. Like, it's senseless. I just finished another book called The Women, and it was about the women who went to war in Vietnam who were never really acknowledged for their, you know, when they would try and get help, psychotic help, whatever, after. Even the VA would say, well, you know, there were no women in Vietnam. And they're like, well, I was a nurse, combat nurse.
There.
I was literally held yeah. somebody's foot in my hand yeah. that got blown off, right? And they were like, yeah, but you didn't see combat, so we can't help you. Right? And so this one wrote the story of, you know, this character mm-hmm. who goes to war. And it's that kind of thing. It's like there's this senselessness of the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. Like, what in the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Right? And why did it go on so long?
Right.
And it's all like a whole generation of young people wiped out. Right. Right. So I get the sense of we're really lucky that we're not living where we live, where we mm-hmm. were born. We just happened to be born where we were born, and right. we're not having that experience in our lives. And I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I don't feel guilty that I'm not there. Like, right. I don't feel guilty that I wasn't born in Gaza, right? Like, I wasn't. And I don't know what it's like to be born in Gaza. I don't know what it's going to be like for those people moving forward. It's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. But I am not there. I am here.
Right.
And I want to be able to live the life I was given.
Right.
And by lamenting the life that I wasn't given, it seems like I'm not appreciating the life I actually have, which is pretty freaking amazing. But I mm-hmm. think there's also, I mean, I do feel that stuff because we have a lot of homeless where we are. Mm-hmm. You know, every day I drive by and it's like, oh, I just wish I could just pull over and like help that person. I wish I could just help that person back into life. You know, I know what it's like to be. I slept in my car for a good month, like mm-hmm. when I was 19, something like that. And it was scary. I don't know if it was a whole month, but felt like a month. It was a long time. Uh-huh. And it was scary to be a young woman sleeping in your car. Like, I had nowhere to go. I could have gone home.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to go home. And I was mm-hmm. too ashamed to go home and mm-hmm. ask for help. And I knew that I would have to change some behaviors if I went home, and I wasn't willing to do that at that point, right? Mm. And so I was in my car, and That was so scary at night. I was just like, oh, God, please nobody break into my car. Like, finding safe alleys to park in and things like that. Anyway.
Anyway, she said.
Anyway.
Shake of her head.
Anyway, but because of that experience, I definitely feel for people who, and going back to this, the many lives of Mama Love, when you're in this cycle of poverty or war or abuse or like there's no way out. There's like, how do you get a job when you smell like piss and you can't even take a shower?
Right.
And you're on drugs and possibly bipolar or schizophrenic on top of it. Like,
right.
How are you going to pull yourself out of that? There's no fucking way. Right.
Right.
So, and there's not really the social services we have in our state anyway for those people to get the help. And we're slowly working ourselves there, but it's like, you know, so I could go all in and like go full on down that road of like, I need to give all of my time to helping the homeless, or I'm choosing to have this conversation with you because you're the person that I want to help and I want to help other people like you who are people like me, because I think that is more powerful and that's where my gifts lie and that's what feels good to me. And I know I'm giving back, even if it's different than the way other people give back.
Right.
I don't know. I don't even know why I went off on that full on tangent when we're talking about
talking about how, like, how to not lose yourself in like all of the
atrocities
of the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
That are just like.
Yeah. I think you definitely take on that. It's not Al-Anon. It's like World-Anon.
Wow.
Don't know. But just because you're sensitive to like waste.
Yeah.
Plastics.
I'm like, you know, everything. Ecology. It's like every aspect of my life feels like this, like, very intense, overwhelming, paralyzing decision. Anytime I use a piece of plastic, or even worse, if I'm gifted a piece of plastic that I'm then responsible for throwing away and putting into like the trash universe, is like, freaks me out.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, partly what I've been working on with my therapist is like, what, like, returning to what my values are. And my former therapist, Jamie Brooks, has a really great exercise called the values deck that we can link to in this. I think I'm due for another round of that. I've done it maybe three times at this point, three or four times. But like reassessing what my top values are right now, not to mean that the values I don't choose are not important, but what are the ones that are most important right now?
Right.
And then as I'm living and making decisions, which discomforts am I willing to tolerate when I have to make a choice between one or the other? Right.
Yeah.
If I have to choose between the convenience of feeding myself a frozen Trader Joe's meal versus not eating, but the Trader Joe's meal comes in plastic that can't be recycled, so then I'm just throwing out plastic when I could, in theory,
make yourself a meal.
A non-plastic meal that's significantly more effort.
Right. And I think that's the thing. It's like life is not just all black and white, right?
Yeah.
There are choices that we make that cause us some comfort or discomfort depending on the choice in which direction we go. So it's like, do I go hungry or do I, I get it. I definitely have been influenced by your ecology and that. And it, I think there is so much there that can be helped. And I do believe we'll get there just because science is so amazing and we're advancing so quickly. There's going to be solutions for it.
Yeah, that's right. You switched it. I got her to switch from Costco toilet paper, which is like real bad on the real bad toilet paper list, to plant paper.
Yes.
Shout out to plant paper, unsponsored toilet paper plug, unbleached bamboo toilet paper. You should all be using it. It's great for your nethers and for the planet.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And we're almost out. So that makes She's like, you need some more? And I was like, I think I have a roll. It'll be and one roll in our two bathrooms and we'll be all right.
Yeah.
We'll last for another day.
Another day.
Okay. So kind of just to wrap this up, like since you're in this, you've been in this funk now for a while, I'm just going to call it that. What would be, do you think, the next action you could take that might set you back on a different path?
Honestly, I think a big one is probably, well, that's okay. This is it. This is me processing. This is how I process this.
Let's hear it out loud.
In my mind, I'm like, well, obviously it's paying my tax bills. It's getting those done so that I am
solvent or whatever.
Yeah. So that I don't have this big, scary what if looming over me.
Okay.
Right. And also in they charge interest.
Right.
Which is kind of insane to me. The whole thing.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So part of it is like I could pay my taxes, but it's not just like a one step item. There's not like a portal I can go to and look up how much I owe and then just pay that amount.
Right.
There's like 85 million micro steps that go into that task.
Right.
And all of those together like fry my brain.
Right. So to me, because all of those tasks fry your brain, to me it means that you need to hire somebody who is probably a little more hands-on to do your taxes for you.
I tried.
Well, you tried.
And they said no.
So we need to try
They didn't even want to touch my taxes. They were like,
so we need to try a different person.
Yeah.
But I think we need to take that off of your plate in a way that is like, this is not your skill set. It's going to take you forever to do this. It'll take them like a half hour to do it if you give them the information they need.
Yeah.
Your job will be giving them the information they need, which is in and of itself a full-time gig of pulling data, right? But the data can be pulled and then you can just ship it off and they can organize what column it goes in.
Yeah.
I think if you, so the next step would be to call somebody.
Yeah.
Look for
which I actually Googled like bookkeepers today.
Yeah.
And then there's like 85 million options. They all cost like $200 minimum a month.
Yes.
To use, which I don't have the money for.
Right.
In my monthly whatever.
Yep.
And I'm just like, and also I don't know if I can trust those people, right? Like you don't want to just pick anybody to handle your money stuff.
Correct.
So,
well, I'll work with you on that. I mean, it's challenging. It's challenging, but it's not impossible.
Right.
It's possible.
It's possible. Well, it must be because apparently everybody else can do it.
Not everybody else does it because there's a lot of taxes owed, but it's just to say like it's possible. So, okay. So the next step will be to call somebody and figure out like how, what they need and get them that.
Right.
And that will feel like you're moving towards solution.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is the, this is where it's going to get weird because in the middle of this conversation of kind of lack and not having, and also we're leaving to go on this amazing trip.
We're going on a trip that Mommy Warbucks is paying for, to be clear. And that also, okay, wait, here we go. So this adds, like, yes, I'm going on this wonderful trip, but the whole time I'm also going to be thinking about how I'm losing 2 weeks worth of wages.
Right.
$1,600
Right.
Like how under normal circumstances, if I didn't have support from my family financially where they could help fill in that gap, I wouldn't be able to pay my rent or any of my bills.
Correct.
For April.
Right.
Because I'm losing 2 weeks worth of.
But you do have the support and they're not going to lose that and you're going to be fine. So you don't need to worry about that. But you're worrying about it and it's not even a real thing because you don't have to worry about that.
Right. I think a lot of. Okay. We're getting, we're drilling down. We're getting to the nitty gritty. I think I still hold So even though I know logically money is a tool, it is a neutral thing. It has become so moralized because we live in this shitty puritanical based country, right? First of all, Puritans that came over from like Holland or wherever, like our original colonizers, they were like religious fanatics. They weren't coming to escape religious persecution. They were coming because they were like cuckoo bananas. Okay. Nobody ever talks about that part. That's the founding like moral element of our country, right? And there's a lot of moral value attached to That's how I feel. This is like my daily life. This is like every day.
None of that occurs to me.
Okay. So, okay. Let me finish my train of thought. Okay. Though. Like money has a like moral weight to it in our society for some reason, or it has at least to me, like if you don't pay your taxes, you're bad. If you're not responsible with your money, you're bad. Whereas in reality, it's very common and very normal for people to not be very good at organizing their finances.
Right.
It's something that a lot of people struggle
with.
Well,
I think that you're putting your own moral thing on it. Like for me, I look at money as a tool to like, I read this book called The Science of Getting Rich.
Mm-hmm. We've shouted talked about out that before.
Wallace Wattles, whoever that guy was. It helped me get over the guilt of wanting money because the way that it framed it is that by me making a good amount of money, everyone around me benefits. Things benefit by my having plenty and to not be in scarcity. And I think you've been in scarcity for so long that you think there's not enough and there's more than enough and there's more coming and it's all going to be okay.
Right. I think before I used to live in scarcity when the bar was up here and now I'm living in scarcity where the bar is here.
Right.
Whereas I felt scarcity when I was in a higher tax bracket.
Right.
Now I'm in a lower tax bracket and it feels more overwhelming and inevitable. Like I can see how people fall down in socioeconomic status more easily than they climb.
Right. And there's that gap happening right now where it's separating, right? That rich are getting richer.
Yeah.
Getting poorer. So that's true.
Yeah. And also my tax money is literally funding war. That's the other thing too. It's like, man, I have to pay this tax money.
It's also funding potholes. It's also funding schools. It's also funding music. We just watched this beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful.
The Last Repair Shop.
The Last Repair Shop won an Academy Award. Watch it. It's like you're just going to cry the best tears.
So good.
And it also funds that. So maybe you need to focus on like what it good it does and not just like it's funding killing kids in Gaza. Like I think you need to. It is
more perspective.
There is some of that, right? Yeah. Like that is happening, but it's also there are also good like somebody will come and put out the fire if this room catches on fire, right? Like there are people who will come to help if somebody has a heart attack in our house. Like there's the thing that it is there is good too. It's not all bad. It's and I think we tend to look at everything's bad.
Yeah.
It's so funny because my role at work is in management. And when I call somebody, they're like, what did I do? Because our natural thing is like, am I getting fired? Like we had a business meeting with these lovely people. You know who you are. I met with you on Friday and I love you so much, Nora and team. We have love for each other. And, you know, they're like, one of the guys said, are we here to get our pink slips? You know, and I was like, yeah, we had to call you out of the offices and have this meeting in the conference room so we could change the lock on your office. But it's so like normal people, like we default to the worst possible scenario.
Yeah.
And that's so fascinating to me. Like, that's why I love doing this stuff. It's like, okay, why is the human condition the way it is?
Yeah.
And is there a way that we cannot default into like, fuck my life. Like what, like, how do we not default into that every day when there is all this evidence out there that that's what is, the way it is, right? How do we find joy in the just day to day? I don't know. It's interesting, but we're out of time and we're going to be dark for One, we're going to miss a week, I think, because we're going to be...
Well, we've been so irregular that I don't even think it matters,
we've
really.
We've been pretty much on every other Monday, but it's at this point, we're going to miss a Monday. We'll be back with some new and improved studio situation when we get back. Hopefully, it'll be less stressful setting up and recording.
Yeah.
We're also going to have our first meeting.
Yeah.
In person in this cool room we have. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see how this goes.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. You're awesome.
You're awesome.
You're a fucking miracle. Drink some water. Look at her. Am I? Am I a miracle? Yeah. Yes,
I'm still here. You are. So.
Same here.
Yeah.
You're a miracle.
You're a miracle. Drink your water.
Yeah. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Practicing.
We want to hear from you.
Find us on Instagram and TikTok at 12 Steps for Everyone. That's at the number 12 Steps for Everyone.
Please like and follow us. You can also send us topics you want us to dig into or follow-up questions from each episode.
And if you know someone who would enjoy or benefit from our conversations, please feel free to share this with them. All are welcome here.